A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And in this podcast, I'm going to look at the overthrow of the Sultan Abdulhamid II of the Ottoman Empire. In a previous podcast, I looked at the development of the Young Turk movement in 1908 and talked about how Abdulhamid had quite cleverly managed to seize a march on his enemies by when he assented that revolution was in the air, simply embraced the constitutional demands of the CUP, the Young Turks, and offered a constitution and elections as the development of civil rights and a return to the Tanzimat reforms in Turkey and the rest of the Ottoman Empire. And as we'll see in this podcast, the result of Abdulhamid's acquiescence not only meant that he wasn't overthrown and that he managed to cleverly save himself and ally himself, or appear to be the figurehead of these progressive revolutionary forces, even though he certainly wasn't and was quite the reactionary, but he set the stage in the Ottoman Empire for a confrontation between the forces of secular modernity, which were associated with European ideas, and the forces of tradition and Islam within the Ottoman Empire, which were still immensely powerful, and the power of the Ottoman Empire's imams still immensely strong. And the crisis would bring about almost civil war-like conditions in 1909. And in the middle of this, Abdulhamid would play his hand quite badly, as it turns out, and attempt to restore himself as an autocrat. And the result is that he enrages the progressive forces within the CUP and the CUP units that exist within the Third Army of the Ottoman Empire, and finds himself being deposed. So if we go back to where we left off and look at July 1908, there was widespread jubilation across the Ottoman Empire from Muslims, Christians, Jews and others that the autocracy of the Sultan had come to an end and that the CUP had appeared to have got their way. However, because Abdulhamid had managed to successfully adopt the demands of the revolution, he had presented himself as being the key reforming figure. So when people cheered for the extension of civil rights and freedoms and freedom of expression and that kind of thing, they were cheering him directly. And so there's an immense amount of confusion that exists at the time. And because the CUP got their way very, very quickly, they didn't have a well-conceived political programme to roll into action from day one. all they thought to do was to reinstate the constitution, which had been prorogued in 1876, and to hold elections. The CUP, because it's a movement as opposed to a unified and centralised political party, has all sorts of different perspectives and ideas. Some members of the CUP think that it should move into government and purge all the Hamidian, the followers of Abdul Hamid, all the Hamidian reactionaries in the bureaucracy. There are those who think that army officers should directly seize power. Those that think that the new elected assembly should be controlled in the distance by the CUP members of the army. So there's a lot of confusion. And as a result, the CUP's hand is weakened. The CUP send 7 ministers to negotiate with the Sultan. There were amongst these 3 significant figures that we'll see in the future. Jamal Bey, Talat Bey, and Mehmed Javid Bey, who attempt to put pressure on Abdul Hamid to bring about reform and parliamentary elections. Sultan seems to be willing to give the 7 pretty much most of what they want. The army salaries are increased. If you've listened to the previous podcast, you'll know that army discontent, the low pay and the frozen pay, I think they lose a month's pay in 1907, was a real bone of contention. The Sultan thinned out the conservative bureaucracy, cut some of their salaries, and offered universal male suffrage for men over 25. The only caveat being that they had to be taxpayers. And unlike previously, there would now be no ethnic or religious bar on elections, so Christians and non-Ottoman Turks from across the empire could vote if they hit the eligibility criteria, being over 25 and paying taxes. The CUP was not interested in preventing any of the parties from contesting elections. And overall, between the July revolution that we looked at in the previous podcast and the autumn of that year when the elections were held, there's an immense degree of optimism for liberals and reformers, and also for minorities within the Ottoman Empire who had placed their faith in the CUP and believed that the CUP would deliver them greater autonomy and rights within the empire. This optimism is inevitably going to be shattered to some extent. And normally when a revolution of sorts has happened, a liberal revolution, expectations from all branches of society are so terrifically high that very few of them tend to get satisfactorily fulfilled. There is plenty of anecdotal evidence that shows that Muslim, Christian, Jewish and other religious denominations, people from those groups and from different ethnic groups, seem to quite be united in optimism and an excitement about the possibilities that the future presents. However, storm clouds were gathering for the Ottoman Empire, not least in the relationships between neighbouring Austria and Russia. Both had things that they wanted from the Ottomans. The Austrians hoped that they would be able to exploit Ottoman weakness by fully annexing Bosnia-Herzegovina, which they had had a protectorate over since 1878. The Russians hoped that this would be an opportunity to undo the Black Sea treaties and to allow Russian warships to access the Ottoman Straits. And the rivalry between Austria and Russia that normally existed over the issue of the Balkans was set aside when the two foreign ministers, Baron von Aerenthal for the Austro-Hungarian Empire and Alexander Izvolsky for Russia, met to discuss these matters. In addition to this, Bulgaria claims its full independence. Bulgaria had been a suzerain, a kind of semi-autonomous nation within the Ottoman Empire since 1878. And now the Prince Ferdinand, who declared himself Tsar of an independent Bulgaria, decided to see how weak Abdulhamid had become, and it was as a result of this, Austria then announces its annexation of Bosnia-Herzegovina. And then following that, Crete declared that it was now no longer part of the Ottoman Empire and it was a unified nation with mainland Greece. So within the first few months of the weakening of Abdulhamid and the beginnings of constitutional rule in the Ottoman Empire, a series of almighty humiliations are dumped upon the new caretaker administration. They become, in the eyes of many Ottomans, a byword for weakness and a rather ominous sign as to the fate of the Ottoman Empire in the not too distant future. The Ottomans are able to ensure that the rights of Muslims within territories that they have just lost are guaranteed and protected, and that there is some financial compensation to the empire for the loss of territory. But it's also not lost on most Ottoman Muslims that this happens during the holy month of Ramadan, and therefore is considered a special humiliation. During the elections, the CUP win 60 deputies. Ahmed Riza, who we talked about in the previous podcast, one of the most significant reformist figures of the CUP era, becomes the president of the chamber. And this makes him the most significant and most prominent politician in Ottoman public life.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
1908, and a magnet for all the anger and resentment that would flow towards him when the backlash against the CUP began in earnest. By the spring of 1909, a society that had rejected the secularism and modernity of the CUP had emerged. The Society of Islamic Unity, which wanted, using its propaganda paper, Volkan, to restore Sharia law. It wasn't talking about simply going back to 1907, to the year before the overthrow of Abdul Hamid, but the committee of the Society of Islamic Unity wanted to bring the Ottoman Empire back to the pre-Tanzimat era. The Tanzimat reforms, if you remember, were the reforms that were instituted from the 1830s onwards, that were the kind of modernisations that many autocratic countries, from Russia to China to Persia, had gone through throughout the 19th century. And the Society of Islamic Unity looked at these reforms and said, well, really, that's when the rot set in. That's when all the problems we have began, because we veered away from traditional Islam and the teachings of the Quran, and we began to embrace non-Ottoman ways, non-Ottoman ideas, and became, as a result, weaker. And we have been kicked around by Europeans ever since. On April the 3rd, 1909, there was a mass meeting of Muslims at the Hagia Sophia Mosque, April the 3rd being the birthday of the Prophet Muhammad. A couple of days after that, the leading liberal newspaper in the Ottoman Empire, its editor Hassan Femi, was assassinated in the middle of Istanbul. And a strange coalition begins to emerge. On the one hand, there is the Society of Islamic Unity, and this is supported by Muslim theological students, Softas is the term. And they find an easy bedfellows with the liberal elites of the Ottoman Empire, intellectuals, journalists, thinkers and writers, who believe that the CUP government is becoming too repressive and too reactionary. Within the army, social class played a key role. Younger non-commissioned officers looked upon the commissioned officers, the gentry, who had become CUP men, as being high-handed and arrogant, and they resented them, and they saw that CUP men in the army held the top jobs and held all the routes to promotion. And on April the 13th, 1909, the great explosion finally happens. 3,000 troops stationed at the Taksim barracks in Istanbul, who were loyal to Abdul Hamid, along with thousands of softas, thousands of theological students, attack the parliament building and surround it and chant for the return of the Sharia law of the illustrious Muhammad and the end of the CUP, and particularly the end of the CUP in the army. They wanted the power to act like an autocrat to be returned to Abdul Hamid, though there's not a lot of evidence to suggest that Abdul Hamid was actually behind this one. Though when he realises that supporters have taken the initiative to seize power on his behalf, he's certainly happy to go along with it. They demand that Ahmed Reza be handed over, probably for violent mob murder in the streets, and many of the CUP's leading ministers have to flee and go and take refuge with the German embassy and places like that. The loyalists to Abdul Hamid very quickly seized key government ministries, and they wanted to quickly restore the influence of Hamidian bureaucrats and army officers. And at first glance, Abdul Hamid would have been forgiven for thinking that he had won. there seemed to be widespread popular demands for a return to autocratic rule by Abdul Hamid. There seemed to be a widespread demand for the restoration of traditional Sharia law. And by the 15th, every governor across the empire has been telegraphed, telling them that that's exactly what needs to happen and Sharia needs to be introduced, reintroduced right away. And so this was a disaster for the CUP. Not only had their previous coup to attempt to overthrow the Sultan have been derailed, but also now it had backfired to the extent that the Tanzimat era from the 1830s to the 1870s had been completely undone. CUP ministers and administrators were gunned down in the streets, but worse was to follow in Armenia. Armenia had supported the CUP, believing that as one of the more badly treated outposts of the Ottoman Empire, that it would be treated better, be given greater autonomy, and would be face far less oppression. In Armenia, the pro-Abdul Hamid army clamps down upon protest, and whilst these figures are always difficult to ascertain, a ballpark figure of around 20,000 deaths occur, the vast majority of them being Armenians gunned down by Ottoman soldiers. So in the space of 9 months, the autocracy of Abdul Hamid had been replaced by a constitutional government and then replaced by Abdul Hamid again. And this was surely something of a record for the swinging of a political pendulum back and forth in such a short space of time. But it was about to change again. Abdul Hamid did not really bank upon the fact that the Third Army was going to play its hand. The Third Army, as we remember, was stuck in Mesopotamia and had been a hotbed of CUP activity. Abdul Hamid was very poorly informed. He had been abandoned by his spy chief, Izzet Pasha, in August 1908, and the political acumen that he'd shown the previous year in embracing the demands of the CUP and robbing them of their thunder seemed now to have ebbed away. He'd overplayed his hand and he had openly crushed the CUP in the most bloody of manners, which had managed to unite the hidden CUP cells within the Third Army, who believed that A, now was their time to act, because if they were uncovered in the near future without having got rid of the Sultan, then they would all be dead, and that B, his bloodthirsty crackdown on their comrades must be avenged. General Mahmud Shevket Pasha, along with Enver Bey and Mustafa Kemal, later Kemal Ataturk, who would be the modernising secular figure of 20th century Turkey, formed a new army, the Action Army, and this was developed. This was created in order to storm the capital on the 22nd of April. This is exactly what they do. They meet up with deposed parliamentary deputies at the city gates at Yeşilköy, and they vow to overthrow the Sultan. And this time, there would be no clever political movings that could possibly save Abdul Hamid. And even though when they attacked, Abdul Hamid recognised that he'd lost and told his own men not to fight, loyalists to him fight anyway. And after a day of major bloodshed across the capital, the guards' troops make their last stand at the fortress of Yildiz, and the fortress falls, and Abdul Hamid is seized and sent into exile. Shevket Pasha creates a state of martial law in Constantinople on April the 25th, and this day is used by and large to settle some scores. Pro-Hamid soldiers and bureaucrats are executed, and a new parliament agrees the overthrow of Abdulhamid in favour of his brother Mehmed Reshad, who would become Mehmed the Fifth. And the fate of Abdulhamid was that he was to be exiled to Salonika, which was the centre of the opposition against him from the Third Army, and the kind of the original place of his humiliation. Okay, well, I'm going to stop that, and we'll keep returning to the story of the decaying Ottoman Empire over this week and the next few. Do remember, if you can give us a good thumbs up on iTunes, that would be brilliant. Find the iTunes page, give us a 5-star review, and say thanks for something nice, anyway. And also, there's a link either in this podcast or one of the others to our Patreon page. Any help you can give, greatly appreciated. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.